agency based on the RSA, funds to us to provide services, and sometimes they're reluctant to use us because they might not have the money in their budget, they might not want us to spend the money to do it. But we're there, and we're available, and we encourage them to use us as much as they can.
Mr. Brown, if an agency came to you with a problem and they didn't have the money in the budget to RSA...
We give them the advice.
You would give them the advice?
Yeah, yeah, I didn't mean to. It's not a question about the way. But I'm trying to speculate now as to why some agencies won't come to us before the horse is out of the barn, you know. But that's true in private practice, you know, the clients come to you, rather than getting the advice before the problem surfaces, so the problem won't come up. They come to you after the problem is there and say, try to fix it for us, and it isn't different from getting the service.
I'm sure we're just getting along the same lines here, in the short time that you've been on board, what is the normal response time to say an agency has a problem, that they go to the Department of Law? With that particular problem, how rapid or how quickly the Department of Law responds?
Depends on the problem, but usually it's just a phone call and an immediate response.
So there's no real lag time?
No, occasionally we might ask to see documentary backup. It depends on the complexity of the problem, but generally I would say the bulk of the problems that we handle are immediately responded to. And we have attorneys that generally work in these areas, that have been working there for years. And so the problems that they're called about are oftentimes not unique in any significant respect, and that allows for an immediate response.
I guess what kind of prompts that question are is the problems that we've had with Christian Gate or an entry or other departments that require legal opinions from the Department of Law in order to respond question that I may have had posed to them, and their response was that it took the Department of Law so long to respond or to actually take up that case. Of course, all this was before your time.
Well, I'm not going to guarantee you that it will change it, Fred, but, you know, you've had a lot of very technical problems come up in fishing game that require research and reflection so that you cannot. If you try to avoid shooting from the hip, giving an off-the-cuff opinion that may have some bad implications for either the agency or the public. And so some of them just require considerable devotion of time and resource before you can come up with an answer.
Let me give you an example of one of the topics you used to come up with an agency like Fishing Game. Let me just tell you that in February of this year, my staff made a phone call. APOC concerning a cash contribution that a friend of mine wanted to give to a political party. They gave us a response over the telephone. Now, having been burned by APOC over responses over the telephone, in the middle of February, I said, would you put that in writing, please? The response was affirmative, that yes, cash amount of money, over $100, a $1,000 contribution, could be given to a political party in cash as long as it was completely documented, name, rank, and serial. I said, great, put that in writing for me. Four phone calls later, 4.5 months later, I got an opinion from the Attorney General's office saying, no, couldn't do that. So then I had to go, the money, of course, had been given, get the money back, return it to prison. But it was a 4.5 month, five phone call process, and the answer was reversed at the end of that period of time. I think that's what that kind of thing could get people in a lot of trouble and has got people in a lot of trouble.
Well, you know, it's the biggest law firm in the state. And the only thing that I can suggest to you is if you have a problem, call me on the phone. And we'll try to rectify it as quickly as we can.
Well, I'm thinking of, you know, sure, a state senator is going to get pretty good response in most times. We know that. What about just a person in an agency who's got a problem, or a citizen? In this case, I was working brokering an opinion for a citizen who wanted to do this. And it took that amount of time, and the opinion was reversed at the end of the process. That's what I'm concerned about. I'm not concerned about me personally, but just the citizens out there and the people in the bureaucracy that have a problem. They call the Department of Law and feel that they're the end all. They're going to help me. That's the Department of Law. They're going to help me. They're going to keep me out of trouble. And they don't have the kind of response time that's needed to keep them out of trouble.
You know, Senator, I'm sure that there are individual examples out there that where there's been inordinate delay or there's been a change in position which has been disappointing. All I can say is we try to do our best as quickly as we can, and we will continue to do that. And any specific complaints that come to you or anybody else's attention, let me know. We respond to each and every one of them.
Any other questions or comments? Yes, Representative
Parshall. Madam Chair, thanks for the courtesy. Just to ask a quick question as long as Mr. Link is here. When the grand jury was making its recommendations for more criteria for bid waivers, it mentioned perhaps market studies being done as one of those criteria. Could you comment on the practicalities of market studies in the bid waiver process?
Under some circumstances, they'd probably be a good thing. The other circumstances would be the situation where it might cause so much delay that it's, you know, it's often the argument is made that it's delay is the reason for bid waiver. So if you were to further delay it by having, you know, a market study done, of course the definition was a market study, whether we send somebody and they call around, or whether we have, you know, a professional consultant go into the area and do whatever it is. But that's often the question. Oftentimes we do effectively do a market study. I mean, it may not be a title, that sort of thing, but that's part of the purchasing agent's job is to say, is if somebody says the only place you can get this is Ajax Incorporated, is to check around and say, no, that's not true. And I've checked, you know, other people in the industry, and they say it's available from several other sources, and it's also, you know, there's a manufacturer over here that makes it, and that sort of thing. So that's part of the job is checking the market.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions from the audience?
I'd just like to add, since you were discussing the trade show, our service, I feel, is pretty darn good. We can get, and it's, the question, again, is the complexity. I can call up the Attorney General's office, and I don't call the Attorney General and say, would you assign me somebody? I call a couple of people in the office, either Jim Baldwin, who you'll talk to later, or John Rabini, and ask them kind of this lightweight question, like, hey, does this make sense, or does this type of thing meet the constraints of these words mean that, or is somebody trying to hoodwink us or something? You know, and they'll give it to the phone, they'll ask us to see it and say, yeah, it means the same thing. But the other type of thing is where they have to go and do their research and issue an opinion, and they go into past present. But we're pretty happy with the service.
And I would agree with you. Baldwin and Rubini are two of my favorites, and I think they're very good. But they're also the people who wrote that opinion saying that lease should be canceled because of favoritism.
While we're on the subject, could I ask that maybe Liz or some of the committees being dealt with give us a synopsis of the state law, state Supreme Court cases on state procurement that would be maybe instructive to us to the work that the court said matters that reach the court on the
I'd like to correct it. One thing that I said too, because I don't want any misapprehension to be out there, on the RSA, that there are some agencies and division within agencies that don't call upon us for legal advice when they should, because I don't think they've ever made arrangements with the Department for the provision of legal services. But we nevertheless provide them with legal advice whenever they have any occasion to call upon. In other words, they tend sometimes to attempt to do essentially legal work when they shouldn't.
In-house?
Beg your pardon?
You mean a layman doing legal work in-house?
Yes.
Because why? Because they don't have an agreement?
Well, can only, I'm not sure exactly why, except that I speculate that they have a relationship with us, they feel that they can call us on this type of stuff.
Are you planning a briefing session with those people to tell them you're here and what you do and the service, that how you can keep them in trouble? I mean, it sounds like there's an accident waiting to happen out there.
Well,
more accidents waiting to happen.
And this is based upon my short experience within the assignment, and we intend to correct one particular problem that I know of immediately, so that this won't happen again.
Sure. There's been a request for a 5-minute break, and let's do make it just 5 minutes.
Take that on the car. Okay,
Holly. Did you buy?
He's concerned.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
some of them are good pieces, some of them.
We probably just closed it for the meeting until 11 o'clock yesterday.
But there are some. Oh, I know. Sure. He still does.
He represents you.
Working out.
No, he always comes down and out, yeah, and he usually came to the meetings without a tie. No, he was kind of around the bar with the young people, because he was young, he was so sure. I fit in with, and I was just, I made him call with him, you know, he just said, hi, I'm trying to do it.
I'm trying to keep the press off my back, I mean, he's got a personal war going.
Well, some of them, it's hard, I don't care, some of them have some tough experiences.
Maybe sporting them regard to the real better, the real stuff, the tiger. Right now, blood centers, and there's nothing else around.
A lot of speculation.
And it's a big one. Yeah, well, the thing is, it's the question is, well, why did he come to me? And I'm not, you know, they have excellent reasons, like I said, there's every day.
Well, three little kids, that would be a person. And there's only two kids, I think.
Lots of times, people are accepting it, lots of times it makes excellent sense.
He has some, I happen to.
We could do it for some reason, because if we did it, we could probably say it was.
And it did that here.
And here's that. But he can do that.
So
we just make it.
There's a turkey system.
Sometimes we can.
Yeah, you hear that.
Well, he had silver spending, but he did go to jail.
Yeah, but he, anyway, this guy told us he wants.
To get pictures and so forth, and he gave it
on his card.
And everybody gets a shot.
And I got that, which I did. And Tony.
Okay.
I said, I can't give him this.
I made some of the one exploits.
Realization.
This guy will never make it.
You may not.
When we do it, we don't have a lot. I think I turned over copies of them every time we had an apparent purchasing violation. And I've already provided copies to everyone we had. And there aren't a tremendous amount of them sitting there. They're probably innocent. I think on DOs, there's about 60,000 a year purchases made. And I don't think we're getting 1% when we go back and say what happened here.
But you're not auditing all of them. Are you?
It's a,
Can you stand the group, are you not?
It's one of these things. You can look for a few things. It's pretty easy to look at the things we do. It's good for what we look at. So, but it's a real quick thing. We probably don't get them all.
Okay. Some states have a regular setup where they audit the department every 2 years.
I believe we used to have one back in the number of years, but then everybody that was auditors got shifted off to auditing this season, and they stopped doing it.
You briefly mentioned protest and appeal. This has been an area other states have adopted a variation of procurement codes. Some are working well, some are not working so well. They vary from having
I think it, first of all, we don't have a lot of protests, but protests are up. I was a conference day purchasing officer last year, protests are up everywhere. Part of it's got to do, I believe, with the declining economy, when people are, don't have lots of business, they're more concerned about what business they have. But the way ours works, we issue a bid, we make an award, according to statute, we issue what's called an abstract. We send it to everybody who bid, says this person won, to serve around, then they have 5 working days in which they'll notify their protest. If somebody has a protest, they feel that they judged wrongly or something like, first of all, the protest comes to the commissioner's office. If it's apparent right away on the surface that we've made a mistake, we don't go any further than that. We just issue an award. It's not necessary to go hire somebody. Somebody calls up and says, hey, you made a mistake, you got my numbers wrong, and actually have a low bidder. We'll correct that right away. It isn't necessary to do that. But if they feel that they have been mistreated, the system is mistreated, we misunderstood, we misinterpreted their specifications, something along that, they then issue a protest, which goes to the commissioner, who was given to a hearing officer. The hearing officer then decides whether the protest moves on to the step, moves out of our hands. We give them a memo on our understanding that it's still out of our hands. That seems to work. I think that works pretty well. I think you probably have to talk with the people who protested to see whether they feel like they're treated fairly. But I think from our end, I think it works pretty good.
Okay, are there any regulations, guidelines regarding protests?
Not specific. Because we get them and pass them on to the hearing officer people, so that's their ability.
Okay, and following that determination by the commission administration, then must the party appeal that to the court, or do we have another level of appeal?
The first one is the protest. They can get hearing for protest. Then I think after that, they go to Title 44, which is claims against the state, which is also a hearing officer level prior to the suit. That I believe that there's another way they can proceed further. So it's going to be.
You mentioned that in my experience some of the purchasing or procurement officers give a tremendous amount of independence. And once again, I've spent the last several days talking to other states. Most of the states say that your purchasing officer has to have a lot of independence so that what is in the interest of the state can be followed by no one's political influence. Some states also classify that position as a classified employee. What is your position? Is it partially expanded?
Yes.
Classified? And what would you advocate would be the best way of
I've been in purchasing in the state for a number of years. My gut feeling is that in Alaska, the legislature and the governor's office have blunt input into the purchasing process, particularly because there's a lot of feeling about local purchasing and what we should be doing and shifting the priorities. We're a big, sprawled out state, and we're being handled by a small, relatively small purchasing agency in a couple of locations. I think without that, I think there's a time down the road when there may be time to set that thing up, but I think while we're still being flexible, I think the legislature, like you say, the governor's office wants something for the process.
Mr. Link, if I can speak.
That's kind of hedging.
You are hedging, and I'm going to nail you on it. But you go to a lot of national conferences on purchasing.
Yeah.
And I know you talk, because we go to national conferences with legislators, and we talk about what our state does versus your state does, and usually the other legislators in other states are basically horrified, but we get away with it. When you go to purchasing conferences on the outside and you talk about your job versus others, do you feel that our state, the governor's office, and the legislature has more input into the purchasing system in this state than you have heard that other governor's offices and legislatures have in other states?
That topic hasn't come up a lot. It has come up some. The last comments that I can remember in my mind was that it seemed to be increasing. The amount of input seemed to be increasing. Trans-Herod insulated, and I, you know, no matter what anybody said, I could make my own decisions. I'm Trans-Herod to stand back in a bigger perspective and say that, if I were a legislator, or if I were, you know, another elected official, I want the people who are spending the state's money to at least listen. You know, I mean, I'm expressing not only my own opinion, would be in that situation, not only my own opinion, but that of some of my constituents. So if I call up and say, you know, hey, could you do some of this? I'd like it if somebody at least was sympathetic rather than has the ability to say, bug off. Well, and I think, you know, my experience here is that, I don't think you want to give that up, and I don't think any governor wants to give that up.
Well, one reason why we put in the statute that the railroad would follow industry procurement practices was so that there would not be unnecessary legislative or executive branch political influence on their procurement. So we insulated the railroad by couching it in railroad jargon, so to speak. Because not many of us are familiar with railroad procurement practices, but there must be some. I've since learned that there are some very unique railroad procurement practices that may be against good public policy for a public policy railroad or a public railroad to be utilized, but they're industry standards out there. They are different. And but we did that on purpose to insulate the railroad from any undue political influence.
That was we had an entity that could operate on corporate power, which would be competing with the private sector, which had been the white elephant of sorts of the federal government, and which became politically lined up probably with spur roads, you know, hither and yon at every election. I know what you're saying. You know, I we all heard this impeachment thing differently, but I'd be without my bias, I guess, that I'd be kind of reluctant to create a situation where we have more slow rolling and whatever the terms Anson used to describe bureaucracies, resistance to policy makers that we've already got. That's your point, I think.
No, I think there's sometimes there's a perception of political cartoon type of thing of people, you know, handing out money and all this sort of stuff. We don't generally get a lot of calls from, you know, I'm saying you editorially, the legislature, it's a question. Your constituent calls you up and says, hey, you know, what's going on here? Somebody from your office will call us up and say, what's going on here? Most of the time we'll call back and we'll explain. You know, we'll write you a letter, or in some cases we'll look into it and say, hey, you know, maybe we're not doing something the right way. And that's, you know, that's not a bad relationship. We get the same type of response from the governor's office a lot of times. You know, one of the assistants will call up and say, hey, what's going on? We'll end up writing them over, explaining, or, you know, maybe we'll do something different. And it's not necessarily, getting calls saying, hey, you know, give this guy a contract, change everything you're doing the way you're doing that way. It's the type of concerns that you receive. You know, it's people don't know what we're doing in a lot of cases, or they don't understand the whys sometimes. And I'm not totally uncomfortable with that relationship. I mean, it would be if it happened all the time. We were sitting there just waiting for the next call. You know, we got a call from your office saying, give this guy a contract, a call from your office saying, don't give them a contract. You know, but that isn't what goes on. You know, 99, 44 of our services is routine. Like you said, some of the people feel that their only access to government, they see government as this, you know, big entity someplace, and their only access is through you. And so we expect that, and we're not comfortable.
Aren't you trying to find the line between political influence and bureaucratic influence? I mean, it seems that for the right purposes, both the bureaucracy and the political structure have an inherent proper function of influencing the contracting process. The bureaucracy for the administrative reasons of operation of the president, what happens, the legislative and political bodies, the executive and legislative branch, for policy reasons. The question that comes out of that, to me, is what the background is. In other words, if the bureaucracy is setting policy contrary
to the elected policymakers who are the, although the public can go to you and they can go to us. When they go to you and you say nothing, they can't do anything to you. They have to do something to us. So their access with any kind of power base is through the political sphere. But how often, or do you ever get, you mentioned the call, give this guy a contract, don't give this guy a contract. Now, I think it's entirely appropriate for the political players in the process to say, what are your criteria? Why didn't this individual win this? Was it the low bid? What were the criteria? And change the criteria for everybody. But do you get input from people that say they want this person to get a contract, or they want this person not to get a contract, either executive branch or legislative branch? The input that you get is basically, first a question, why didn't this happen? I mean, I know when I call somebody up, I try to find out what's going on. And it's, okay, how do you do this? Were they the low bid? Why didn't they get it? What are the criteria that you decided that on? And then if there needs to be changes, the changes should be made to the criteria, not to the specific case. What do you, I mean,
I think I sort of agree with you.
Is that what happens?
Is called the bureaucrats should make, you know, policy on how we do things, but the overreigning policy should come from, you know, the governor's office and the legislature.
Your policy should be that policy required to implement the policy of the political process.
Yeah.
And your policy should relate to administrative efficiency, level of review, and all the paper trail that's involved, and the mechanics of going from this appropriation to this project or this lease or this thing.
And if we're doing something which is dumb, but it works, you know, that I don't have any problem with your coming in and saying, that's dumb even though it works. You ought to buy 4-cylinder engines instead of 6. Everybody's making 4-cylinder engines now. That's, you know, and a salesperson may have come to your office and said, these people are killing me. You know, all I can get anymore is 4-cylinder engines. They put in 6. The only people who sell them are somebody in Iowa. You know, we're not getting the business here. I don't see any problem. We shouldn't be the only people that get stuck into it. Somebody say, hey, there's a lot of concern out here. Lots of people ask us to sell 4s. Nobody sells 6s. Why don't you buy 4s?
Well, what if somebody comes to you and tries to get you the right specification? You've got to buy 5-cylinder engines. There's only one manufacturer selling vehicles in the United States with 5-cylinder engines. And that so limits your bid that you have a very substantial problem with your bid. Is that a legitimate policy, or does that get to the range of being questioned that everybody's going to have to buy it out?
Okay, you get involved in specification, maybe I'll get to a nutsy boltsy, but, you know, the agency comes in and says, this is what we want. You know, if our people, you know, are saying, hey, be skeptical. If they say they got to have a 5-cylinder engine, ask them why a 6 won't do or a 4 won't do. And if they got some reasonable specifications, we would like to accept everything. Now, that's not reasonable, so we have to limit it down. So our folks are trying to be, you know, trained, if you will, to be skeptical when somebody asks us for something like that. We don't just do it automatically. But we might put some constraint or some term on it, and we may have been doing it for years, and we may continue doing it for years, and it may, for some reason, not necessarily be just the type of thing for the efficiency of how we work. It may just be something that's sitting around, which may affect, you know, which people might perceive if you call them and say, well, if it changes, it's done. The word political pressure pops up. You know, I think we got to expect that sort of thing.
A lot of so-called copy machine Xerox, you don't mean there has to be a big Xerox.
Yeah.
A copy machine, you mean somebody to say Xerox.
We get back, I just came back from a conference of people, and they said one of the questions that comes up, there was a discussion, on ethics, they said, have you ever had people come to you and say, just because you ask them a question, you're applying political pressure? Now, this is from a gentleman from Connecticut who was a political technical person. And he says, it drives me crazy because the technicians want to have things nice and black and white. You want to come in and say, hey, why are you doing that? You know, alert. You know, your best. messing with my system. I mean, like I said, a lot of technical level people would just like say, hey, leave us alone. You know, the system can't operate that way, the government.
What public access is refused in each piece of this process? Because it almost seems that you're saying you have to be reasonable. Reasonable to us is what's reasonable to the public, and we don't get in trouble for it, basically. That's what the eventual judgment is of the effectiveness and activity of the political process.
How it will look at the agency.
Correct. What level of access is there to anyone that wants to know exactly what's happening, other than information that's in the process of I'm trying to think of everybody that's a potential bidder needs to have all the same information at the same time. But other than that, in terms of the paper trail and all the information, is it really available so that somebody that has a complaint after they've been awarded can go in and look at everyone else's bid,
sure,
and look at the entire package, the justifications used for why the five-cylinder engines were better than four or six.
Yeah.
And each of these determinations is somewhere, somebody's name is on the line, and somebody said this, somebody responsible for that, and the public can find it all.
In fact, we tell vendors, you know, one of the smartest things you can do is if you're going to bid for something, is come in and look at last year's bid. See who your competition is, what kind of prices they have.
Mr. Link, not every agency does that.
Okay, within, I don't know what the agencies out there are doing. Well, okay, they have.
But you're supposed to.
Well, their information is supposed to be public information.
Not everybody is.
Well, I thought it had to be.
No, well, I know you think, I know that.
Well, I think it has to be.
There's one out there that isn't.
No. Only one?
Well, that I found so far. The railroad.
Oh, yeah, the railroad. Well, you know, we're, if you will, divorced or separated.
Well,
or
no,
you know,
the it doesn't have application for a whole bunch of stuff.
But it is a public, that we bought it.
Well, yeah, but we created a contradiction. We don't create a private corporation holding on by the state. There's no such thing as those terms. They don't fit together. They're not a complete definition.
Yeah. From a bureaucrat's viewpoint, we were sort of said, gosh, is that what really supposed to happen? But, you know, that's what everybody decided to do, so that's what's done.
It's past time for lunch. I'd like to break for lunch now. Mr. Link, can you come back at 1:30? There still seems to be questions for you. And for those of you who don't know, Mr. Hickey, Henry Hickey, who's the purchasing officer for the municipality of Anchorage, has been listening in this morning, and he'll be speaking with us on September 5th. But Mr. Hickey, welcome, and I'm
thank
so
you.
Glad you could join us today. That's great. We'll be back at 1:30, and I hope everybody will be here. You won't be here?
Senator Fikes, Senator DeVries plans to be in the afternoon session.
Wonderful. Okay, very good. See everybody. 1:30. Elizabeth, announcement?
No, I'll be here.
Okay, and Mr. Link, you'll be back with
sure.
Great.